dress appropriately, will drive an appropriate car, live in a home or apartment or wherever we might live. That's not the thing that makes us unique. What makes us unique is who we are in our relationship with God and how that translates into interacting with the world around us. And Peter has a lot to say about that. And as we looked at a couple weeks previously, he is passionately communicating to people who are under great oppression because of their faith. If we were to take the time to outline the attack on Christians that took place in the first century, it would be disturbing. And Peter, being in Jerusalem and knowing that that's where the church began, grew tremendously in the first 10, 15 years. So much so that it became an issue politically and citywide in terms of who are these people and what's going on. Took people unawares, you might say. And so there was a lot of oppression. And Nero, being the emperor at that time, if you understand anything about him historically, Nero was insane at best. And he persecuted Christians ruthlessly. And so in this context, Peter writes his first letter. And he wants to encourage those people who know Christ. And so in reading his first letter, it's really an encouragement to us as well. And so let's look at 1 Peter chapter 1, starting in verse 13 through verse 21. I'm going to read the whole passage, although we'll be concentrating on verse 17 and following. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Be self-controlled. Set your hope fully on the grace to be given you when Jesus Christ is revealed. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, be holy, because I am holy. And since you call on a Father who judges each man's work impartially, live your lives as strangers here in reverent fear. For you know that it is not with perishable things, such as silver or gold, that you are redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. Through him you believe in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him, so that your faith and hope are in God. We pick it up in verse 17 with what I call a lifestyle of worship. Peter uses an interesting phrase where he says in verse 17, you are to live as strangers. This involves, first of all, in Peter's words, an issue of respect. The focus is on the fact that one Christian addresses God as Father simply means that there is that relationship there. And because of that relationship, we live accordingly. When we have a relationship with someone in this world, we live according to that relationship. If you're married, you live accordingly. When you get married, the idea is that you're really not dating anymore. So you don't go out and try to find dates. You're married. You live according to that relationship. If you have good friends that you're close to, you live according to that relationship. If you're going to go do something, they would be shocked if it was something that they enjoyed doing that you didn't call them. So you live accordingly. And that's what Peter is saying. One man put it this way. In himself and in relation to the world, God is the Holy One and the Judge. In relation to the readers of the epistle, he is the one who called them, and he is their Father. And because of that, one's lifestyle reflects that. And so when Peter uses that phrase, live as strangers, that makes sense. Because this isn't home for the Christian. This isn't the final destination. This isn't where eternity will be spent. It will be in a whole different arena, a whole different reality. And so Peter says, live your lives as strangers. He's just saying that you hold on to things loosely. He doesn't say you don't value things, that things aren't important to us. But we realize that this isn't the end result. There's something more. Christians in the first century are the ones who very much lived aware of them. And when they heard the gospel and responded to it, they began to live out what they believed. We have an example of that in a passage most of us have read, and I know I've shared it many times on this platform, Acts chapter 2, verses 42, Acts chapter 2, verses 42 and 47, where there's this little description that Luke gives of what the early church was about. Talk about how they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to prayer, to fellowship, the breaking of bread. The passage speaks of the fact that they met together from house to house, taking their meals with gladness. They'd go to each other's homes and have these dinners where they'd pray together, rejoice together, have a great time together. And the impact of that was felt throughout the city of Jerusalem, because this wasn't normally done. These people were living differently, and they were very accepting of people outside. They weren't a limited group, you know, us four and no more. They were open to others. And they reached out to others in love. They met needs of other people. They sought to encourage and help other people. So the community wasn't sure what was going on, but they were living as strangers. They weren't really living as the world at that time would have wanted them to. So it involves this issue of respect. They live that way because of respect. Peter says at the end of verse 17, lives as strangers here in reverent fear. Now that phrase might at first cause us to think, well, reverent fear, what does that mean? Sounds like you're fearful, you're afraid. That's not the point of the original language. The original language, the point is, it's just saying you live respectfully. You're living in respect of who God is. But reverence, that respect, fear is another respect word. I don't know about you, but in my relationship with my earthly father, I had reverent fear. I knew what he would condone and what he wouldn't and what he'd want me to do and not want me to do. I knew the boundaries. And so I would be foolish if I didn't live within the boundaries. And he always told me, he says, when you go out, when I was in high school, when you go out, if you're going to be past a certain point, just call me. So I knew all I had to do was call. If I just call, everything will be fine. But I knew I had to call. So whatever I was doing, wherever I was with my friends, whatever we were up to, on a Friday or Saturday night, I knew by a certain time, I better get a phone. Now, believe it or not, cell phones didn't exist. They had a thing called pay phones that you had to drop a whole dime into to make a phone call. I just had to find one of those. Or if I was in a home, find a phone and call. Why? Why didn't I just, well, I didn't have to do that. I'm 16. I didn't have to do that anymore. Because I lived in reverent fear of my father. I did not want to upset him. Not because he would tie me up and leave me in a closet for a week and feed me under the door. It wasn't because of some horrific fear that I had. I just didn't want to do that to him. I didn't want to damage that relationship. I didn't want to impair that relationship. I had a respect for my dad. Reverent fear. And that's exactly what Peter is alluding to. That because we have that relationship and we love God, we don't want to do anything that would upset him or cause him grief. There isn't any spouse, and again, this is, I wouldn't say this 100% of the time, but I think most of the time, there isn't a spouse that wakes up in the morning and says to themselves, how can I make my spouse's life miserable today? What can I come up with? They don't do that. Marriage is kind of like a dance. You hopefully stay in step, but every once in a while you're going to step on one another's toes. And when that happens, you have to realize that your spouse who stepped on your toes didn't do it on purpose. We're good at stepping on one another's toes. And so we realize that that's not something that was intended, but we seek not to do that. Why? We respect them, we love them, we care for them. And that's why Peter puts it this way. He says, here in reverent fear, you have that respect. You have that sense of value of that relationship. And that's what he talks about. He says in verses, verses 18 and 19, he has a description of redemption that is far beyond silver or gold. He uses something that's very valuable in this world. These Roman emperors would go off and they'd defeat these other countries. And what would they do? They'd take all their wealth, all their gold, all their silver. That was highly valued. And Peter says, for you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed. You know, our redemption doesn't come from things such as that, even though those are highly valued in this life. There's really no comparison. They can't compare with the sacrifice that Christ made in having his body broken and his blood shed for us on the cross. And Peter uses that word redeemed. Most of you probably know that that's really a word that pictures a very realistic scene in the lives of the people that he was writing to. Not so much in our day, even though it still goes on. It goes on undercover, though. And I'm talking about slavery. Because redeem is a word that pictures a slave market in ancient Rome where one could buy a person and they would own them, or they could buy them and set them free. They could free them from the slave market. But they had to pay a price. They had to pay a price to do that. And so Peter is painting a picture saying, we've been ransomed from an empty life by Christ's blood. We've been bought by him and set free. Totally free from sin and from death. Ultimate freedom. And it's almost like he's saying, you know, it's time to grow up. I came across a little description years ago of what it means to be a grown-up. Let me share it with you. What does it mean to be a grown-up? It means growing wise through experience and through empathy. It means being humble and admitting your mistakes. It means cultivating the very adult virtue of self-control. It means being resilient and good-humored. Being a grown-up means putting others' needs and interests before your own when those others are dependent on you. Most of all, it means asking at all times not what is pleasant or convenient, but what is right. I like that description of what it means to be a grown-up, and in one sense, that's what Peter is saying in verses 18 to 19. He defines for us, once again, the price paid to redeem us, to buy us back from the slave market, if you will. And because of that, we can live in respect of who God is, his gift, and we can value it. And that impacts how we live, how we relate to other people. And so Peter is trying to encourage all these folks and us by saying, look what we have. Realize even the most valuable things in this world, like silver and gold, can't match what Christ has done for us. Therefore, we live in a certain way. And he builds on this, and he talks of being loving as children, because we have a God who plans things. Look at verse 20. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. We have a God who plans. What Christ did on the cross wasn't just kind of a random, impromptu idea. It was planned. God planned it before creation occurred. This whole affair was not something that was an afterthought on God's part. Think about that. How do you feel when you know that whether it's a spouse or a good friend or a boyfriend or girlfriend, someone close to you, plans a special evening for you? And they put some work into it, some thought into it. And maybe it's a surprise party, or maybe it's just a dinner party in your honor that they're putting together. And you come and you have this great time. How do you feel about that person? You feel really encouraged. I remember years ago I called a friend of mine. And I was talking to him on the phone. And it happened to be the day before his wife's birthday. And I was talking to him and I said, Chuck, what are you going to do for Shelly's birthday? Silence on the other end of the phone. I said, Chuck. And he said to me on the other end of the line, he said, you have just saved my life.
He totally forgot. He forgot Shelly's birthday's the next day. I said, it's tomorrow, Chuck. You better get something together. Well, she never knew about that conversation. She never knew that conversation existed. But Chuck was able to get his act together and do something wonderful for his wife. But it's that kind of an idea. God didn't just get a call from Jesus, hey, what are we going to do about these folks? They're separated from us by sin. What can we do? Ooh, let's think. No, it was planned before the foundation of the world. Why? Because God wants to maintain our freedom and have a relationship with creatures like us who can respond and have the freedom to respond or not to respond. One of my favorite lines about the Reformation is that one author wrote, Martin Luther freed people to really believe, not just succumb to an institutional platitudes or institutional demands that the Catholic Church was putting forth at that time, and just acquiescing because they didn't know any other thing to do. What Martin Luther did in bringing people to the Bible and a personal relationship with Jesus Christ is he freed them to believe. But the flip side is he also freed them not to believe. Because he took on the structure of religion at that time and showed its flaws, people had the freedom not to believe as well. But that's a good thing. Because then you see where someone's colors really lie. There's no more playing church. Either you're a believer or you're not. And sometimes persecution or pressure define or sort out who really believes and who does not. And so Luther freed people in both directions. And so God in his plan of creation and redemption says, I want creatures who can respond to me. And so he plans in advance that what Jesus did on the cross. It wasn't something that was just haphazard. God is one who plans. He did not forget them. He did not forget us. He's been planning for this all along. And so what Peter writes about is something that is rooted in eternity. This was God's plan for us. To come to him because of what he was willing to do for us. And this just speaks to me, and hopefully to you, that we have a God who is personal. Verse 21, right at the beginning. Through him, you believe in God. Through him. It's not a matter of trying to get God's attention and bring enough sacrifices so that maybe God will pay attention and be gracious to us and forgive us. We've sacrificed enough. I can remember when our oldest daughter was in Indonesia and she was on a mission trip with Youth with a Mission. And they were ministering in Indonesia. And she came back, she was telling me all along the road you'd see these little idols and vegetables and little offerings in front of these idols, all along the dirt roads. All these gods that people would offer idols to, hoping to catch God in a good mood so that he would be gracious to them. Remember Elijah, the prophets of Baal. You remember Elijah, Mr. Sense of Humor, taunting them? Because they were supposed to put all the sacrifice on a big altar, and they would call on their God to drop fire on it and consume it, and nothing happens. And Elijah's sitting there. This is in the Bible. And he says, maybe he's asleep. Maybe he's on vacation. So Elijah's just taunting them. The whole idea is I have to try to do enough to appease God so that he'll look with favor. Not in the Christian faith. Not at all. Every other religion out there, every one of them, you have to do that to some extent. You have to appease the God they say they believe. Christianity is the only one. So when Paul writes in Ephesians 2:8, he says, you are saved by grace, lest anyone you boast. We're all on the same ground in front of the cross. It's grace. Nothing but grace. But it's grace through a person, like Peter says. Through him you believed in God. Through him. There's that personal touch It's not left to chance. It's not left to, well, have I asked for enough forgiveness? Have I prayed enough? It's not that at all. The implication is that in Jesus' resurrection, the believer has the assurance that he or she too will be raised from the dead. That we will live forever with God. Not because we did anything, but because he did everything. You remember when he made the covenant with Abraham in Genesis? Remember that story? Those of you who have taught Sunday school remember that story. Where animals were cut in half. And the idea is that was an old way of making a covenant. In that the people would sacrifice these animals, cut them in half, and they'd walk hand in hand together through that separated animals in order to signify that they have made a covenant. Well, God said, let's make that covenant, Abraham. Abraham was great. Abraham knew how to do that. That was part of their culture. That's what they did. We now just sign contracts. We don't involve animals. But that's what they did. But what happened? God caused Abraham to fall asleep. And God was the only one that went through. Because it was all on him. It was all on him. And that's the way salvation works. It's all on him. That's where the freedom comes for us. God says, you're totally free. You don't owe me anything. All I desire is a relationship with you. And so God says, basically, be in a relationship with me, and all things will fall into place. And they will. I don't have to try to be good. I don't have to try to do anything. I just need to be in a constant relationship with him. And so that's why Peter says, be holy. Be holy because you're in a relationship with him. You're moving in that direction with Christ on a daily basis. So in this world, really, Christians, as Christians, we certainly are called to listen to a different drummer. We're the ones that care. We're the ones that couldn't care more. Because we make a difference in people's lives simply because we care about them. Because we're rightly related to Jesus Christ. So Peter says, through him you believed in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him. And so your faith and hope are in God. Because basically the same thing is going to happen for you. I came across this a number of years ago. It's simply entitled, Place Your Life Before God. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well-adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. We just need to place our lives before God. And so Peter, over the last couple of weeks as we looked at chapter 1, has basically laid out reasons why we can do that. And why we listen to a different drum. It's because of all that God has done for us. What better way to rejoice in that than to worship him? So let's do that. Let's spend time worshiping. Heavenly Father, thank you for allowing us to worship. Thank you for allowing us to be your children, for calling us to yourself. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and to worship you and to fellowship with your people. God, hear us as we worship you. Amen.
This next song is a newer one. And it's called Beautiful Things, and it talks about how God takes people like us, people made of the dust, and he turns them and makes them into something beautiful. And I think that really connects with what Peter is saying here in 1 Peter, how he's saying, look at what Christ has done for you. Live like that. Be new as he's made you new. And so this song is about how God makes us new and is making us new. And so just be thinking about that and His amazing transforming grace as we sing this together.
All this fame, I wonder if I'll ever find my way. I wonder if my life could really change at all. You made beautiful things. You made.